It's Lars Larson. Thanks for listening to my podcast and for listening to The Lars Larson Show. I want to push you around.
Well, I will. Well, I will. We've been patient, but our patience is wearing thin, and your refusal has cost all of us. I want to push you down. Well, I will. Well, I will. These governors won't help us beat the pandemic. I'll use my power as president to get them out of the way.
Welcome to Monday on the Lars Larson Show. And yes, we're going to be talking about Massacre Monday as the vax mandates hit full tilt today in both Oregon and Washington for workers. In fact, I was getting some questions from my friends in Idaho early this morning. What the heck is going on in your state? It is deadline day for many state employees and some critical medical personnel. And yeah, the states of Oregon and Washington are going to shove them right out the door. We will talk about that. You'll get my take on it in the commentary a bit later. But first, I want to give you some good examples of where the mass vaccination has not protected folks in the way that Governors Kate Brownshirt and clueless Jay Inslee might have suggested. And that includes the demented Delawarean whose voice you heard in that little mashup we did a moment ago. But first, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to have you on board. It's a Monday, and we serve the entire Pacific Northwest, have for 21-plus years, and we're glad to have you join the conversation. And, of course, naysayers go to the head of the line. Now, I want to tell you something about naysayers, because we invented that idea about 25 years ago. I kind of expected that other folks would follow suit, but nobody else seems to want to do that. Watch CNN and see how many conservative voices you see on there, or MSNBC, or even on Fox News these days. Not too many conservative voices. You would think that they wouldn't want to hear from the other side, but this is the place you can do it. The only thing you have to remember is get to your point up front. Don't tell me the history of Western civilization first. Let's get right to your point and then stick around for a few questions, because if you've taken a position counter to mine, I figure you can handle a few questions. If you can't handle that, I understand why you're not a naysayer. We've got a Twitter poll, too, today, and I think this is one of the most outrageous things that's happening after you take account of the Massacre Monday of threatening to fire some of the most critical workers in our society en masse because they won't take the vax. But today's question sums it up. Do renters who have not been paying rent for as much as a year or longer, do they need even more protection? Now, I would answer, no, they don't. They need a job. They need to earn a living. They need to pay the rent. And right now, we have 10.4 million jobs available in the United States. Here in the Pacific Northwest, we have close to 150,000 open jobs. If your friend tells you he or she cannot find a job, they're either not looking, they do not want to go to work, or they're just not paying attention. But House Speaker Tina Kotek, yes, she plans to run for governor. And I think this is part of her plan. She wants a special session of the Oregon legislature. Now, did Tina Kotek call a special session to say, maybe we should question whether or not Kate Brown even has these authorities to come out and make these emergency declarations, which, by the way, include all of you, but do not include the state legislature and do not include the judiciary. All the judges are free from that mandate of Kate Brown. And you've noticed, or maybe you haven't, but I've noticed that over the last year and a half or so, every time somebody goes to court and asks an Oregon judge, these folks are all appointed by Democrat governors over the decades. When it's Kate versus citizen, citizen always loses, Kate always wins. So maybe that gives you a hint as to why Kate Brown has decided to exempt the entire judiciary from these mandates. But Tina Kotek wants a special session in this case. She hasn't called one for other more important reasons, but she says we have to make sure people aren't evicted for not paying the rent. Now, as you know, some of those rent moratoriums came about in the early part of last year. So there are people, I don't know what the longest is. There are people who haven't been paying the rent since April or May of last year. It is now late October of 2021, and many of them are still not paying the rent. What does Kotek say about that? Nothing is more important than keeping people housed. The pandemic and the coming winter demand action now. So she wants to make sure that 12,000 folks who've applied for pandemic assistance. Turns out the state of Oregon is not that good at handing out money. They are good at giving away. Ask Jay Inslee. He gave hundreds of millions of dollars to Nigerian scam artists and has yet to get it all back. But they've offered up pandemic relief. Now, at this point, with jobs available, if you were working a job before the pandemic, and there are now 10.5 million jobs nationwide and 150,000 or so here in the Pacific Northwest, is there any reason you don't go back to a job and start paying your rent? Well, Kotek doesn't think you need to. We need a special session for legislators to fix this problem. That's the way she's put it, as though she wants to put these people on permanent non-payment. Now, I know there are some exceptions to this, but I'll tell you something. If you're capable of working a job, if you were working a job before the pandemic, unless something has changed dramatically for you, can anybody, even a naysayer, tell me why can't those people go back to work and start paying the rent again? Pay their own rent instead of expecting the rest of us to front it for them. So that's on the agenda. You can find the Twitter poll two places, at Lars Larson Show and at LarsLarson.com on our website. Always brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at UltimateTruckService.com. Now, I told you I will get to the vax mandate massacre that is happening on this Monday. But there's something else that's going on, and I'll give you two data points on that. We've talked crime plenty of days. This is about the so-called homeless issue. City Hall, in this case Portland City Hall, is using guerrilla tactics to punish neighborhoods by forcing the homeless populations on them. K2 News had the story, the ABC affiliate. The city of Portland, on the taxpayer's dime, is taking problem RVs from one street to another, literally hooking them up to a special tow truck and towing these RVs, dumping them outside of homes without any warning to anybody in the neighborhood. I mean, I never thought we'd get to this point, but that is what they're doing right now. The RVs were picked up from one area and moved a few blocks over, leaving all the trash they had accumulated behind and dumping them into a new neighborhood. City Hall has paid for pumping out the septic tanks of these RVs. They have ignored the fact that most of them are not registered, they're not licensed, they're not insured, they're not being legally parked on the streets. And now City Hall is going to drag them around town and just drop them into different neighborhoods? How about dropping one or two of them in front of Ted Wheeler's house? Why don't you drop them there and send a message to the mayor? This is outrageous. Secondly, a bunch of people got together on Nextdoor, not in my neighborhood, but in another neighborhood, and said, we're going to have a big street party, a block party, and we're going to use it to send a message to these new RVs that are accumulating along with trash and danger, you know, the danger of fire and everything else. When they did that, 15 black-clad counter-protesters, that's the way it's being described, showed up in the neighborhood to disrupt that event. So citizens wanted to send a message, and it sounds like Ted Wheeler's Antifa buddies decided to block it. Coming up, we'll talk about Massacre Monday and one place in Oregon that's hugely vaccinated and is still having a big COVID outbreak. We'll get to that in your phone calls and emails. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network.
That makes a lot of sense. A lot of nonsense.
Right. You're bloody well right. You know you got a right to sit.
This is the Northwest Nonsense.
How much longer do we have to sit for this nonsense?
No left-leaning, dead fish rapper bias. No mega TV network liberal agenda. Just the cold hard facts from Lars.
Maybe we should call it Massacre Monday, the day that governments and even private sector critical care operations like hospitals and clinics in Oregon and Washington slash their staffs over the vax mandate. Thousands of the most essential professionals in our society, doctors, nurses, cops, paramedics, prison workers, and firefighters, all losing their jobs. We're cutting medical workers in the midst of a pandemic, cutting cops and corrections officers in the middle of an increase in violent crime. And why? To force people to take the COVID vaccination. Governors Kate Brownshirt and Jay Inslee want vaccinations in the 80% range or even higher. Well, look at what's happening in one specific population, which has more than hit the mark. And if you don't believe me, check out the Eugene Cash Register Guard, the Daily Dead Fish Wrapper for Lane County. The Register Guard says the University of Oregon had 17 COVID cases in mid-September. The following week, it went up by 50%. Then the first week of college classes, the number nearly tripled to 46. Last week, it jumped to 57. Those are some big percentage increases, and that is in a population of only 28,000 students and staff at the University of Oregon. If you're thinking that's lack of vax, you'd be wrong. The University of Oregon mandates vaccination for all. So 96% of students took the jab. Faculty and staff, they hit 95%. Even with virtually universal vaccination on campus, it doesn't seem to have made a difference. And this is why we're firing people. And I've had a few of you write to me after I posted that on social media and say, 57 cases, Lars, that's not much. No, think of it this way. That's 57 cases out of a population of 28,000. When you compare that to the most recent week available for the state of Oregon, for example, 9,000 cases in a population of 4.2 million, the rate is virtually the same. So all I'm asking you is logically, if Kate Brown and Jay Inslee say we all have to be vaccinated, that will make this problem end. Well, you have an experimental population, and believe me, the University of Oregon can be very experimental. I've gone to school there myself, didn't finish, but I left before the liberalism took hold. But when you have a population that is nearly universally vaccinated and you still have a big outbreak, if you take the math, the numbers, and the numbers I've given you, 57 out of 28,000 versus 9,000 in the most recent week in Oregon in a population of 4.2 million, the rate of infection is identical, which means even if Kate Brown and Jay Inslee could push the two-state region into 95 or 96% vaccination, based on what's happening at the University of Oregon, it isn't likely to make any difference. And then I got this email from a mom. She wrote to me, my son works for Oregon Liquor. I guess they now say it's Oregon Liquor and Cannabis Control in Milwaukee. He did not get a vaccine, but it went against his beliefs and received one so he could support his family. He was told an exemption was hard to get and probably would not keep him employed anyway. This morning, Monday, a temp worker went to HR and told them, I didn't know about the vaccine mandate. He must have been hiding under a rock somewhere. They walked him through the process of getting an exemption and told him he was good to go. Just has to wear an N95 mask and social distancing. This makes me so mad I could scream, such hypocrisy, name withheld. On Facebook, Alan Painter writes, Lars, so if I understand Kate Brown's intent after or about releasing 370 criminals from prison early, this is the Measure 11 juvenile cases, although these people are all now adult men. They will have no criminal history, Alan asks. So as you see here, there'd be a background check if they applied to be a teacher. So this would go away. Are we sure that Kate Brown has not caught the same disease Joe Biden has? Who in their right mind thinks this is reasonable? Oh, wait, there is a group, the far-left progressive Marxist Democrats. And he's absolutely right. We talked about it last week. Kate Brown wants to grant clemency to nearly 400 people. They are all now adult men, but they were convicted as teenagers of some of the most heinous crimes you could ever imagine. No, Kip Kinkle is not one of them. Kate Brown isn't that dumb. She specifically excluded Kip Kinkle. But all these other juvenile criminals, rapists and murderers and the like, are now going to be cut loose early if Kate has her say. And because they were convicted as juveniles and because of the changes in the law, they will be able to say, I have never been convicted of a crime, even if they are a murderer or a rapist or both. On Twitter, Cambry writes, breaking by a vote of 76 to 54, the Texas House passed a bill that would require public school athletes to compete with athletes of the same biological sex, even if they identify with a different gender. Now, I can't wait for the Pacific Northwest states. I know it's a bit of an ask. But can you imagine if the woke progressives in Oregon and Washington would say, hey, we ought to protect the rights of young ladies to compete in athletics without having to compete against biological males who now want to wear a dress and grow their hair long? Our question of the day, and this one comes in from Lane. Lars, I love your show. I heard the state of Oregon's considering banning the sale, manufacture, or possession of semi-automatic weapons. If they succeed, do you know how they'll go about finding who has the guns? Thanks, signed Lane. Lane, there are two ballot measures, 18 and 19, that are being proposed. They do not yet have the signatures to make the ballot. They may not make the ballot, and I hope they do not. But if they do make the ballot, if Oregonians are crazy enough to vote them in, and I would suggest to you one other data point that's important, 50.8% of Oregon households own guns. Now, that doesn't mean that they're all solid Second Amendment fans, but they own guns. If they vote to effectively disarm themselves, you're not going to have to worry about finding them, because what's going to happen is this. If one of these ballot measures has to do with ammunition, one has to do with semi-automatic weapons. If they ban semi-automatic weapons, you are a criminal just for possessing one, if this becomes law. All they have to do is sit back and wait. They'll have plenty of victims. Somebody will be found to have a pistol or a rifle, and they'll be put on trial. They'll be convicted. And in most cases, they will lose forever their Second Amendment freedoms. If you think they're going to have to do that to too many people to scare the daylights out of everybody, I think you're wrong. And now today's Daily Grill.
Insane.
Are you completely insane?
Ridiculous.
They get more and more ridiculous.
Flat out dumb.
You're even dumber than I thought.
Who deserves today's Lars Grill of the Day?
Maybe they're just really, really stupid.
Find out right now. Brought to you by Les Schwab Tire Centers. Doing the right thing matters.
Well, in this case, the grill goes to, and shame on, the Washington State Department of Transportation. They just announced they're taking five rest areas north of Seattle on Interstate 5, and they're simply closing them. You say, why are they closing them? Well, because they have too much trash, too much vandalism, and a staffing shortage. So instead of stepping up their game and saying, we're going to have better security, we may even do some stings, and we will catch the people who've been doing this kind of thing, they're just going to simply close them up. So the people who are the disruptors in society, they're going to get away with it. Today's best email brought to you by River City Environmental, the leading environmental and emergency services company, now hiring with full benefits, leading pay, and a signing bonus. Online, rivercityusa.com/careers. A teacher requiring students to write their pronoun after their name on assignments. It's happening at Neil Armstrong Middle School. I've left the name off of it at the request of the writer. Coming up, a GOP candidate for Oregon governor. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a Monday. It's the Radio Northwest Network. It's honestly provocative talk radio for the Pacific Northwest. I'll point out to you something you probably already know, and that is that Oregon has seen more than one-third of a century of Democrat Party rule from the governor's mansion. And we can see the results now. An out-of-control dictatorial person in the form of Kate Brown, who's decided she has all the power in the world and her own party won't even question that. Well, now voters have a chance to make a change next year. And Bridget Barton is one of those seeking the Republican nomination to run for governor of Oregon. And she joins me now. Bridget, welcome back.
Thank you for having me on again, Lars.
Well, just before I let you get to the things you'd like to say, tell me this. We're on Massacre Monday today, I've called it, because the states of Oregon and Washington, I know you're only running as governor of one, but they want to massacre a huge number of some of the most important professionals we've got that serve our communities. Medical professionals, corrections professionals, police professionals, firefighters, paramedics, doctors, nurses, the whole lot. If you were governor, what would be happening in your case?
There would be no mandate. There would absolutely be no mandate. You know, we had a press conference this morning in front of Legacy Emanuel Hospital, where literally hundreds, maybe over 1,000 employees would be terminated because of her vaccinate or terminate mandate. And I'll tell you, this is probably the most reckless, irresponsible decision by a governor I've experienced in my lifetime. She is putting all of us at very serious risk, eliminating all these career professionals in healthcare and in law enforcement and in emergency response and in teaching. It's just at the press conference this morning, the statements from all these frontline nurses, it was just eye-opening, and it was deeply sad for them and their careers. But the point they made repeatedly is that she is putting the entire state at risk. What are we going to do when we go to the hospital? Somebody's got a stroke or a heart attack, and there's no tech there to do a CT scan. What are we going to do? We call 911. No one answers because they don't have enough people to cover the shift. Or when you call an ambulance, there's not enough EMTs out there to drive the ambulances. Or in the nursing homes. Oh, my gosh, Lars. I am very, very alarmed at the situation in our senior care facilities around the state. And this mandate will just make it worse. Some of them have been shut down because of the lack of people to serve. But it's the these frontline responders. They have dedicated themselves to us for the past 2 years. Most of that with no vaccine available, and they were in there working. There's no record of at all of them in all their PPE with their masks on and all their protection passing COVID to anyone. They're the ones saving us from COVID. This is just a tragedy in the making. I'm appalled. It would not be this way on my watch. It would never be this way. First of all,
well,
because I stand up for people's rights to make their own decisions on health care. I'm vaccinated, but I will defend everyone's right to make their own decisions.
Well, and I think they're making sensible decisions. They get a chance to make the decision, weigh the risks of the vaccine, which we're learning more and more about all the time. And when people tell me, well, it's a very small chance that you're going to die or get blood clots. Well, tell that to the young lady who was born in Oregon, grew up in this, moved to Seattle as a mom and didn't want to get the shot. Finally said, OK, I'll get it. I want to be a room mom to my kids at school. And she's 37 years old in good health with no underlying conditions, and the vaccine killed her. Her doctor said mm-hmm. she had VITT, vaccine-induced thrombocytic, and I can't say the rest of it, but she died. And you say, well, what do you tell her? What do you tell her family? Your mom died. She didn't need the vaccine. She didn't want the vaccine. She took it because she was told you can't have contact with your kids at school if you don't do this. She did it. And her kids now have no mom. And you look at Seattle right now, has cut 140 bus routes for public schools. Why? They can't find enough drivers because of the vaccine mandate. This is driving both states right to the edge. I don't even understand the agenda. Most of the time, I get it when Democrats do things. They say, we're going to raise more taxes. Yeah, I get it. They want bigger government, smaller citizen. I understand it. I don't agree with it, but I understand it. But in this case, it's as though you're driving both states right to the very edge. And as you said, putting us on a precipice, we have one big storm, one big earthquake, one big anything. And what happens? You say, well, we've permanently removed those people by taking away their licenses, taking away their jobs, and telling them, get the heck out of Dodge.
You know, I don't think we need a crisis of a magnitude like that for this to be something that becomes very real for the average Oregonian. I don't think people understand how many people are being lost today and in the next week coming. It's a lot. And you're so right. This is an individual decision that people make. A lot of the people that I have spoken to that are in healthcare in particular, they've had COVID. They went through it. They recovered. They're fine. And they have antibodies. And they don't want to risk the vaccine because they're healthy people with immunity already. We have not, as you well know, we're among a handful of states that are doing this vaccinate or terminate thing. I don't understand their agenda either. We could have just tested. We could have these people continue to work the way they have been with full PPE when necessary. They're not passing it. I had one nurse today. In fact, you'll get a kick out of this one. She's not vaccinated. She was told that she's going to be fired. She went home, discussed it, and so on. She ended up getting COVID from her husband, who was vaccinated. And now
Wonderful.
She's being terminated, even though she has had COVID and she now has antibodies. So
Bridget,
gone too far.
I threw this at my audience earlier, but over the weekend, a story broke that ought to be the front, you know, the front end of every newscast. The University of Oregon came out and said, we've got a big outbreak of COVID. And you say, well, how big? And they said it's doubled, then it's tripled the number. Now, the numbers are small, but it's only a population of 28,000 people, campus students and faculty. And you say, well, you know, how big is it? Well, it turns out they're having the same kind of numbers that the state of Oregon's having. And you say, okay, so it's the same. It's in the state of Oregon. I said, yeah, but the student population is vaccinated to the tune of 96.3%, and the faculty is 95.8%. If anybody doesn't believe me, it's right there in the cash register guard, the local fish wrapper in Lane County. And I said, hold on. if you've got that is more vaccinated than Iceland, more vaccinated than Singapore, more vaccinated than Israel, all countries that have had major outbreaks of COVID after more of the population got vaccinated, what is the point of getting to 75 or 80 or 85 or 90% when you have a population that's 96% and it didn't seem to make any difference at all?
Right. The virus doesn't differentiate particularly between vaccinated or unvaccinated. It's still there. That's why we have all these breakthrough cases. And the fact that she's done this and gone this step too far in a political decision, she's going to leave a legacy in Oregon, Lars, that is going to be one of immeasurable loss and immeasurable risk to the general citizens of the state. We are now at serious risk of not having frontline responders there for us when we need them, and for no reason. These people's careers are lost. Many of them have no choice but to leave the state and look elsewhere for employment. They're gone.
And by the way, that brain drain is probably going to be permanent. Bridget, tell everybody where to find your campaign for governor, and I wish you luck in the primary.
Thank you, Lars. It's BridgetBartonForOregon.com. Check it out, and please join me in the fight to take Oregon back.
Bridget Barton, who's running for governor as a Republican. We've invited all the Democrats on. She's the founder of the conservative Northwest magazine, Brainstorm Northwest. Coming up in a moment, one Northwest congressman who once put a tax on space travel and one Washington state trooper with a memorable last sign-off. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. In a moment, the Northwest member of Congress who wants to put a tax on space travel, believe it or not, and the state trooper from Washington state with a very memorable sign-off. But before we go to any of that, I want to bring on Dan Cicchini, who's, Dan, you're in the coffee business, right?
No, I'm not. I'm just a resident of Bend. I'm just trying to let you know what's going on with a coffee house here in Bend, Oregon, Kavista Coffee, who's doing a fundraiser for healthcare workers, EMTs, teachers, anybody else losing their jobs due to the governor's vax mandate. And the rally started at noon. It runs through 6 p.m. Kavista has felt that it was unconstitutional what the governor did when she tried to close businesses or have takeout only. They stayed open. OSHA fined them, so they've had a donation jar for donations for their OSHA fines. The coffee house is started by two people called Kevin and Krista, there's the Kavista, and they feel very strongly about people's constitutional rights to run their own business and for their own managing their own health. And so today being the 18th, they're doing a kind of a party rally at their coffee shop in Bend on Centennial Boulevard. And they've got food trucks out there, and some of the food trucks are offering either significant discounts or free food to healthcare workers that are getting fired because of the vax mandate. It's also open for sale to the general public, but it's just a great opportunity, I think, for Central Oregon citizens to be able to support free choice in terms of COVID vaccination.
Well, I would say bravo to them, because do you get the sense that there is general public support for Kate Brown or Jay Inslee's vax mandate, take the jab or lose your job?
No, I don't. I think it feels like people aren't necessarily against the vax mandate or against vaccination, I'm sorry, or masks, but I think they want it to be a choice. And I think when you make it a mandate, it angers people regarding the constitutionality of that. Now, I think I said Centennial. I meant to say Century Drive is
Century
where they're
Drive. That's fine.
That. And
but
I've got no connection to them except that I patronize them. But I'm not a
I think
I
this is a good thing.
Anything like that.
This is a good way to send a message back. Dan, thanks a lot. I appreciate the heads up. By the way, I want to admit, I don't like taxes in general. I'll get to your calls in a second. But you saw the last week the flight, the Blue Origin flight that had William Shatner, age 90 now, the oldest man, oldest human being ever to go into space. And now we've got Congressman Earl Blumenauer, who has proposed a space tax. I'm not kidding. but is called Securing Protections Against Carbon Emissions Tax Act. And he wants to put an extra tax on anybody fortunate enough to be able to travel into space. Now, Shatner didn't have to pay for his trip, so maybe it doesn't apply to him, but it would probably apply to Elon Musk or any of the others, Jeff Bezos, who are involved in those kinds of enterprises. Second thing, I want to play this for you. It's a little bit of a longish soundbite. This is a state trooper in the Yakima area. He's a Washington state trooper, and he realized, I'm going to be fired as of Monday. So he gave one of the most memorable sign-offs on the radio. Take a listen to the way he made his final radio call, and this was released over the weekend. Take a listen.
This is my final sign-off. After 22 years of serving the citizens of the state of Washington, being asked to leave because I am dirty. Numerous fatalities, injuries, I've worked sick, I've played sick. We buried lots of friends over these years. I'd like to thank you guys. I'd like to thank the citizens of Yakima County, as well as my fellow officers within the valley. Without you guys, I wouldn't have been very successful, and you've kept me safe and got me home to my family every night. Thank you for that. Wish I could say more, but this is it. So, State 1034, this is the last time you'll hear me in a state patrol car. And Jay Inslee can kiss my ass.
Yeah, I think there are an awful lot of people out there with that same sentiment about Jay Inslee and about Kate Brown. Let's go to Sally. Sally, are you being fired today?
Well, probably tomorrow. Today's my last day being employed. Although
what do
I've
you
been
do?
On a leave of. I'm a registered nurse with Legacy for just shy of 27 years.
What does that tell you when this institution says to you, if you won't take the vaccine, you're fired, you're out of here, and Kate Brown says, and we're going to take your license?
It's pretty heartbreaking. I actually worked from home for the last year, and they're taking my livelihood. And the frustrating part is that even the NIH has an article out, you know, stating that the higher vaccination, the countries and the counties with the highest vaccination have the highest COVID, and the veterans did a study with 6,200 veterans that shows the efficacy of the J&J after 4 months is down to 3%. So I'm being fired if I don't get the J&J vaccine today when it's got 3% efficacy in 2 months.
It doesn't make any sense at all. Sally, I wish the best for you and all the other healthcare workers, and I wish Oregon and Washington would regain their collective sanity. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you on a Monday, live on the Radio Northwest Network and serving the region that includes Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. Today's Twitter poll, do renters who haven't been paying for as much as a year, some of them are a bit longer than that, do they need even more protection? House Speaker Tina Kotek, who is also campaigning to run for governor of Oregon as the next Democrat to lay waste to the state, she's suggesting a special session of the legislature to provide help for people who haven't been paying their rent, about 12,000 of them. So a special session of the legislature to deal with a problem that only is directly affecting a tiny fraction of the entire state's population. But worse than that, my suggestion to people who are not paying the rent, there are hundreds of thousands of available jobs in the Northwest. There are literally 10.4 million jobs that are available in the country. And so if you don't have a job, go get one. And if you say, but I don't want to work, I want somebody else to take care of the rent for me, I suppose that's one of the things I could talk to Nick Shivers about, but I asked him on to talk about something else. But before we get to that, Nick, welcome to the program. Nick, of course, is a supporter of the program, but we get to call on him when we want to talk about real estate issues. Welcome back.
Always a pleasure to be here, Lars.
Do you got a take on, because you deal with this as both a landlord and as a real estate guy, what should we be doing about people who in this situation, we've got 10.5 million jobs nationally available, hundreds of thousands here in the Northwest. We've shoveled out money left and right to people over the last year and a half. Somebody actually wrote to me, what are these people supposed to do? I said, well, they could use their STEMI check, their unemployment check, the extra $600 a week they got for a while, and the extra $300 a week they got for a long time. They could use their stimulus check. They could use their child care tax credit check. They could use a lot of things. They could pay the damn rent. I don't know if that's your response, Nick, but it's mine.
Well, there's always... I love how politicians like to group all people together. Yes, there is a very small group of individuals that are struggling because they don't have jobs and they can't get jobs. But that is not the majority of the people out there that are not paying rent. And the thing that it's one-sided, it's the people that are not paying rent. What about the poor landlord that uses that because that's their retirement? It was the American dream. They're using it for their monthly living and they're not getting paid. What about them? Because they never talk about, they always talk about the greedy landlord, but it's the mom and pop landlords that are getting crushed.
Yeah, because I've heard from some of them, Nick, people who said, look, my husband and I spend decades paying off this little house or two houses, and this is our retirement income. And now we're not only not getting that, but we still have to maintain the property taxes and all the other costs of maintaining the house because the landlord doesn't get to shirk his or her responsibilities just because the tenant is doing it because the government has given them leave to do exactly that.
Lars, here's that thing that just blew my mind. I had a client called me, and again, the people were not making any payments on the rent. But the city of Portland was fining them $100 a day because the property had cars and stuff like that. And I was just like, that is unbelievable. They will not let the landlords do anything about it, but they're going to fine them $100 a day until they get that cleaned up. So my poor clients had to spend money after finally we were able to help them get those people out of the property. And they still had the city of Portland fines of like over $2,000.
It's crazy. Let me ask you about this, though. I'd planned to do this because I saw this story about Zillow. Zillow is this, you know, online, I mean, they do a lot of different things. And apparently they got into flipping houses. People use them as a way to shop for houses as well. But in this case, they've now said, hey, I'll tell you what, we're not going to do that anymore. Do you have any idea of why they're backing away from it? And how does this affect the rest of us?
Well, basically what they have said is it's a supply chain. And that's, in my opinion, not true. What they have been doing, and this is one thing that a lot of my agent peers get mad at me about, is I hear agents all the time saying, these iBuyers, they're ripping people off. But Lars, that's just not always the case. Yes, sometimes people, when they sell it to these iBuyer platforms, it's less money. But we tracked here in Oregon. Out of 17 times we go and look at an appointment, 17 times our suggestion is to list it traditionally, and one time is to sell to the iBuyers. And especially like companies, there's Zillow, there's Open Door. Open Door is kind of more of the iBuyer agent friendly. They understand that there's a place for agents. They make the process a lot easier. And they're buying a lot more homes. Why? Because they're getting rid of these homes. Zillow right now has so much inventory on the books because they are not working with many agents. And so I truly believe that it's because on average we have 30 days or less, and their properties are setting for months and months and months and months. And that doesn't necessarily go well with your stockholders.
No, it doesn't. And so they've decided they've maxed out and they've said they're going to take a pause on this. I don't know. I don't have a problem with people flipping houses. I haven't flipped houses, but I have friends who've done it. And frankly, if you take a house and you buy it for a certain price and then you put some TLC into it and turn around and sell it at a profit, that's what almost everybody in the marketplace does, Nick. I mean, I can go down to Freddy's and buy a steak for a certain amount of money, or I can walk into a nice restaurant where they've added the ambiance and the smart cook and the kitchen and everything else, and they sell that same steak for 10 times what it would have cost you at the grocery store. Why? Because they've done a good job with it. Okay, and that's just making one product into a higher value product and selling it. I don't see the problem with doing that.
There, personally, I don't think there is a problem. This is America. Businesses are there to make a profit. And if someone, the convenience is worth what we see nationwide, okay, is they're giving about 10% less than what the property could get on the open market. Why? Because the open market will usually get you multiple offers. Again, every once in a while, one out of 17 times, that's not the case. That's why you have to understand what the market's looking like. There's three or four Wall Street, Open Door, Zillow that are making the offers. As you know, Lars, we were the first company in town to actually offer an instant offer platform. So, yeah. No, it's making communities clean up that house that's beat up, get it back on the market, increase the values. There's nothing wrong with that. The concern that I do have is when Wall Street comes in and buys properties, beats out the American dream, first-time home buyer, and then they do not put them back on the market. They keep them because I see them trying to make a little Europeification of America. The American dream is still out there. People that own properties have much better net and gross when at the end of their retirement days than if they rent. So
absolutely right. That's Nick Shivers. You can find him at nickshivers.com. Coming up, we'll tell you about journalists saying their First Amendment rights are at risk, and I'll get to your calls.
You're right. There are tens of millions of Americans who aren't on the hard left or the hard right who feel the world has gone mad. So in what ways has the world gone mad?
Well, when you have the chief reporter on the beat of COVID for the New York Times talking about how questioning or pursuing the question of the lab leak is racist, the world has gone mad.
Now, that's Barry Weiss, the young lady you heard, and the man asking your questions is the estimable Brian Stelter from CNN. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Barry Weiss is a journalist, a writer, and an editor. I've been a journalist basically my entire professional career. She wrote, was an op-ed and book review editor at the Wall Street Journal. And then she went to the New York Times until 2020, and she finally left the New York Times. And she said, this has absolutely gone nuts, that reporters are essentially finding you're not allowed to report on things. Take a listen to some of the examples she gives.
When you're not able to say out loud and in public that there are differences between men and women, the world has gone mad. When we're not allowed to acknowledge that rioting is rioting and it is bad, and that silence is not violence, but violence is violence, the world has gone mad. When we're not able to say that Hunter Biden's laptop is a story worth pursuing, the world has gone mad. When, in the name of progress, young school children, as young as kindergarten, are being separated in public schools because of their race, and that is called progress rather than segregation, the world has gone mad.
Again, that's Barry Weiss, and Stelter doesn't seem to know what to do with her to say, well, hold on a second, you're saying the whole world has gone crazy. Yeah, when most of what most of us know about what's going on in the world comes from the consumption of some kind of media. Now, for some people, it's the Wall Street Journal, the New York Times. For some people, it's local television or radio. For some people, it's TikTok, for goodness sake, where they learn what's going on in the world. But she says this is having an effect because people don't know what's going on because the reporters feel they're not able to actually go out and tell the stories. Take a listen to this.
Who's the people stopping the conversation? Who are they?
People that work at networks, frankly, like the one I'm speaking on right now, who try CNN. And claim that it was racist to investigate the lab leak theory. It was.
But,
I mean,
who
let's
said
just
that
take
at CNN?
An example.
But I'm just saying that when you say allowed, I just think it's a provocative thing you say. You say we're not allowed to talk about these things, but they're all over the internet. I can Google them.
Brian,
I can find them everywhere. I've heard about every story you mentioned.
Of course.
So I'm just suggesting, of course, people are allowed to cover whatever they want to cover.
But
no,
you and
not.
I both know, and it would be delusional to claim otherwise, that touching your finger to an increasing number of subjects that have been deemed third rail by the mainstream institutions and increasingly by some of the tech companies will lead to reputational damage, perhaps you losing your job, your children sometimes being demonized as well. And so what happens is a kind of internal self-censorship.
I think she's absolutely right. And I'd love to have Stelter, who's a joke at CNN, the Chicken Noodle News Network, I'd love to have him explain who is it at CNN that's actually pursuing the Hunter Biden laptop story, the story about the fact that now for well almost 2 years now, we have known that that on that laptop, there are emails that implicate the president of the United States in the sale of favors by his coked up son, Hunter, promising that dad would do things, and fairly good evidence that dad did exactly that. That when Hunter Biden was making a lot of money for some strange reason on the board of directors of a Ukrainian natural gas company, and that company was about to come under investigation, and Joe Biden, as vice president back then, demanded the firing of the prosecutor who was going to investigate the company on whose board of directors his son sat, and that he threatened to withhold $1 billion in support from the United States from the Ukrainian government, saying, you're not getting the billion unless you fire that guy. And he got exactly what he wanted. And Hunter Biden got millions of dollars. And the laptop emails show that the big guy, Joe Biden, was getting a piece of it. If that isn't a sexy story, I don't know what it is. To your calls now. Let's go first of all to, how about Terry? Hey, Terry, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Yeah, hey, Lars, real quick. I was just wondering, as a matter of fairness and equity, shouldn't all people receiving state or federal benefits like welfare or rental assistance have to prove their vaccination status?
No, I'm not going to go there because, Terry, I don't believe that the government has any business telling you what you have to do in the way of medical treatment one way or the other. I know that what you're trying to do is tie it together and say, well, we're gonna insist on this. I have a feeling a lot of those people would probably say, fine, that's what it takes to get the check. But do you think the government has any business telling you what you should do?
Zero, but we're losing all our police officers, firefighters. It doesn't even make sense. The people that aren't contributing, they're fine, and the people that do contribute, they're out.
Absolutely, and you're absolutely right about that. And from that to Mike. Hey, Mike, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind? Hey, Mike. Mike took a powder on it. Let's go to David. Hey, David, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
Well, I noticed earlier when you were talking about letting all these guys out of prison, their felonies, this and that, that their felony records, you know, they don't apply for a job. They don't have to say, hey, I'm a felon.
If they were convicted,
to bear arms anymore. So how come they can just shift around and say, okay, well, this group is free, but that group ain't, but that one's kind of, I don't get that.
If they were convicted as teenagers, the plan that Governor Kate Brown has is to say, I'm going to grant clemency to all these people. We were promised when they changed ballot measure 11, the way it applied to people who were teenagers, who under ballot measure 11 were usually sent to adult court. They were convicted of very serious crimes like murder and rape and child molestation as adults, and they were sentenced to adult sentences. She now wants to wipe that out, and if she grants them clemency under the way the rule applies to juveniles, they will be able to say, I have never been convicted of a crime, if that answers your question.
Well, but will they be able to have firearms? And my guess
I don't
is
know.
No.
I don't know. You know, because an awful lot of this is very unclear. I mean, even the people who are pushing it don't know exactly what the result was going to be. When they passed the so-called reform of Measure 11, they said none of this will be retroactive. Well, Kate Brown is now taking that and turning it into a lie by saying, I'm going to make it retroactive by simply declaring that these people never committed their crimes. They're being granted clemency. So why is the firearms issue so important to you? Because you have a conviction and you don't have Second Amendment?
No. It's a concept of different. This whole thing, and it's rampant in America. And it's a concept that we have a different rule book for whatever little group you happen to be in.
And right. You're right about
that. That's what's fracturing America.
I agree with you, David, because it's rules for thee, but not for me. In fact, later on today, I'm going to play a soundbite for you from Jen Psaki, where a reporter, in this case, Peter Doocy from Fox News, is saying The Washington, D.C. metro area has a rule, a mask rule. Whether we think that's smart or not, the rule is there. The president of the United States over the weekend goes out for dinner with his wife and doesn't wear a mask. And she and Ducey is asking her, how come the president has all these mandates and things that he's pushing for on some people, but he doesn't have to follow the rules? And the answer is because Democrats have double standards, or they'd have none at all. And they have rules for thee, but not for me. Thanks so much for the call. You're listening to the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's a pleasure to be with you, and I'm glad to get to your phone calls and emails in a moment. Over the weekend came the news that China had launched a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile. Now, the official word from Beijing is, oh, no, 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 don't worry your pretty little head about that. That is not a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile. It's just a routine spacecraft experiment. I thought I'd get Robert Wilkie's take on this. Colonel Wilkie is the former VA secretary under Donald Trump and a Heritage Visiting Fellow. How are you doing, Colonel?
I am fine, thank you, Lars.
Should we take the Chinese protestations? Oh, no, just routine. Nothing to see here, folks.
Right. Actually, we should look more closely at what the press secretary to the president said today, and that we are in a competition with China. Well, China doesn't think it's in a competition with us. It's in a conflict with us. It seeks to destroy us, to replace us as the world's preeminent power. And this is just another step on that road, in addition to what they've been doing in intimidating, trying to intimidate our friends in Taiwan and in Japan as well. So, no, we don't listen to the Chinese, and we had better start paying more attention to what this administration is saying and not doing.
Well, since you mentioned Jen Psaki, or Peppermint Patty, as we like to call her, she not only said we're in a competition with them, she said, and we don't mind competition. And I was, when she said that, I thought to myself, hold on, if you're in a foot race or you're in a cooking, a chili contest, you know, you don't mind competition. Right. But if you've got a country that says, we want to eclipse you economically, we want to eclipse you militarily, we want to eclipse you diplomatically to where other countries kowtow to us, and that the United States is replaced as the preeminent freedom-loving country on earth by a communist country like China, I would say, yes, we do mind that kind of competition, wouldn't you?
Right. Absolutely. And we go back, Lars, to what Golda Meir reminded us of back in the 1970s, when she said, when somebody tells you he wants to kill you, believe him. And that is something that is completely lost on this administration. They are playing patsy to the Chinese. They are doing everything they can to accommodate the Chinese economy. In the meantime, we see our allies realizing this. Japan has thrown away, thank goodness, the old MacArthur Constitution, and the new prime minister, Kishida, has said, we're opening the spigots on defense spending. We don't know that we can count on the United States, but the Japanese Navy and Air Force is now expanding exponentially. That's a good thing in one sense. It's a sad thing when they can't trust Washington.
I'm talking to former VA secretary and Colonel Robert Wilkie. Let me ask you two, I think, essential questions that I don't think get mentioned enough about this subject. Does the United States today have a nuclear-capable hypersonic missile, to your knowledge?
Let's just say we are not eclipsed by the Chinese or the Russians yet.
Good. Well, but yet, except that it begins to sound like the Chinese are trying to openly display to the world, we've got better technology than the country that has been the preeminent military power on the earth, right, and that is the United States. And that they want everybody to see that they're in that position. And it just makes me wonder. I don't want you to disclose secrets you're not supposed to disclose, but it sounds like they're saying we've got a military edge over these people. And I want you to, would you mind describing, when you can put a hypersonic missile in orbit, and this one actually circled the globe and then went off toward its target, you're essentially saying something, and I was telling one of my producers, I was a kid because I was born in 59, but in the 50s, when Americans learned that the Soviet Union had put something the size of a soccer ball in orbit, right, you know, Sputnik, that Americans were, I think, properly freaked out, that they said, hold on a second. They can put that, and it's going to come right over our heads every 90 minutes. And all that was a little ball that went beep, beep, beep. This thing is something that doesn't go beep, beep, beep. It can go boom, boom, boom.
Yeah. Back then, Lars, Lyndon Johnson said, we are not going to go to sleep by the light of a Soviet moon. This is obviously on a different scale. This administration has not admitted that the Chinese are trying to weaponize space in violation of every applicable treaty that they are a party to. And we had better get on the ball. One other area, and I know you've talked about this in different shows, that they are advancing at a pace that I certainly think this administration has no concept of, and that is in the world of artificial intelligence.
Yep.
And right now, when it comes to the threat that that poses to our Navy and Air Force, that's the one I look to, because we do have we still have a qualitative edge, but their ability to inject confusion, their ability to force our systems to fight at so many different levels, it is growing exponentially, and that is a clear and present danger to our fleet and our Air Force in the Pacific and to our allies. And this administration is silent in seven languages.
And why? Why are they silent? Why does Biden take this so lightly that his press secretary can come out and say, oh, a little friendly competition, we don't mind that?
Yeah, right. Well, this is their worldview. They really believe in their heart that the United States, and Blinken is a classic example of this because he said it in the past, we're the problem in the world. We create most of the angst on the planet, everywhere from Africa to the Antarctic. And if it wasn't for America's wealth and assertiveness, then the world would be a much more peaceful place. I mean, right now they're getting ready to foist on us a comptroller general, the head of the GAO, who is a graduate of Moscow State University and will not release her thesis because it talks about Marxism's triumph over the West. Republican senators have been asking for weeks for this thing, and they won't get it. This is what is happening. And China is just another manifestation of a thought process that says, well, you know, really America's the problem. And if we just play nice with these people, then they're going to go away. Well, that's not how Xi Jinping thinks. He wants to replace Mao as the greatest leader in the history of China. In order to do that, he has to get rid of us. He's dedicated to it. And right now we have an administration that is asleep at the switch.
Okay, so Colonel, do you remember how dismissive the Democrats were when Donald Trump created Space Force, and even how dismissive both Biden and his press secretary have been about it this year? It's like it's a joke. It's not a joke, know, with this development, is it?
No, it's not a joke. But that also goes to the caliber of people we have. I was asked this morning about General Powell, whom I certainly work with. My father was a comrade of in flight. And we compared this crew to the people who were around the Bushes and even President Trump in terms of their capability and their experience. And it's a sad commentary when we have people who have never run anything. They've never been engaged in, except for the Secretary of Defense, in any kinetic fight. When their starting premise is America is the problem, then we're going to continue to fall farther behind the Chinese in terms of their accelerated race to surpass us militarily.
Yeah, this is absolutely outrageous. Colonel Wilkie, thanks very much. That's Colonel Robert Wilkie, the former VA secretary. We'll be back in just a moment. I'll get to your phone calls and your emails at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@larslarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you and always glad to take your phone calls and your emails. This segment brought to you by NickShivers.com for an instant offer to sell your home immediately. No showing, no hassles. You pick the closing date. NickShivers.com for details. Our Twitter poll today: do renters who have not been paying rent for as much as a year, in some cases a bit longer than that, do they need more protection? The House Speaker, in this case in the Oregon House of Representatives, Tina Kotek, who's also, I should mention, running for governor of the state, has said we have to have a special session of the legislature to help out the roughly 12,000 people statewide who've applied for pandemic assistance. Listen, people who haven't been working for over a year, and I've had people say, well, how are they supposed to make those rent payments? I said, get a job. And I had at least a few people send me notes. They said, look, even the folks at Amazon are saying, we're going to pay $3,000 signing bonuses and $17 an hour. So if you know somebody who's saying, I can't pay the rent, I haven't had a job. Well, there are hundreds of thousands of jobs out there. And the fact that Amazon, for people like warehouse workers, when you're offering $35,000 a year and a $3,000 signing bonus, I know a way you can pay the rent. Go to work. And in the meantime, a lot of us have been asking the question, for those who didn't pay the rent, what did you do with the unemployment money you got? What did you do with the, at least for a few months, the extra $600 a week you got? What did you do with your stimulus checks? What have you done with your extra child care tax credit money? All the other monies that have been shoveled out. And then people are saying, gee, I spent all that and now I can't pay the rent. Well, I think that's your problem, not the landlord's problem. To your calls now. Let's go to David. Hey, David, welcome to the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind?
Hey, just a little tribute to Colin Powell. You remember that Iraqi information minister, Baghdad Bob?
Yeah, Baghdad Bob, the guy who came out and kept saying the Americans are not in Iraq when we were very much there. Yeah.
Yeah. Colin Powell was giving a press conference, and he was there. For some reason, he picked Baghdad Bob. And Bob said, according to a recent CBS poll, only six out of 10 Americans aged 20 to 24 cannot find Iraq on a map.
Yeah.
What's your feeling about that? This is the greatest comeback ever. And he paused. The late Colin Powell paused, and he said, yeah, but those four out of 10 that can, they're all Marines.
And that is a great comeback, David. You're absolutely right about that. Let's go to Andrew. Hey, Andrew, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind?
I just wanted to get your opinion on this. I didn't have any criminal record for like most of my life. I'm 40 years old. I've paid taxes and everything like that. Worked and done everything. I got a felony, and I went to court, and I, fought it and everything like that. I was found guilty, unjustly, and I fought it, and I've appealed and done everything like that. I've lost my Second Amendment rights because not convicted felon. So,
hold on, you're mumbling a little bit, Andrew. But did you commit the crime?
No.
Okay, but you were convicted of it, right?
I was convicted of it, but in court, I went to trial. In court, the judge sat up there, and he was looking at the sentencing paperwork, the sentencing grid, before he even heard the testimony from the officer, or before he'd even heard the case, he'd already decided that I was guilty.
It a judge trial or a jury trial?
My attorney said that I should opt for the judge, and I opted for the judge, and the judge even said in the final,
that was verdict, your choice then, said, right? You chose to have a judge trial. There are certain strategic reasons to do that. So you chose a judge trial. The judge decided you were guilty. What do you want to do at this point? There are ways to clear that. It depends on what you were convicted. What were you convicted of?
I was driving a car that had drugs in the car. I was test driving a car. I was planning on buying a car. I have no drugs on my record. No, nothing like that.
Well, what were you convicted of?
Everything. Of possession of methamphetamine. And,
how much of it?
I had no drugs in my system.
Andrew, you keep telling me other things. How much did you have in methamphetamine?
It said it was just over 2 ounces.
Okay.
There were no fingerprints on the bag. I didn't.
But you're not, Andrew. Here's the problem. Here's the problem, Andrew. You keep trying to convince me you didn't do it. You were convicted of it. Have you appealed the conviction?
Yes.
And what was the result of that? You were still guilty, right?
It was about the two charges they filed me with, and they were trying to not group them together, and they turned me down. Yeah, they turned me down on the appeal.
Yeah, so you're still convicted of it, and you need to go talk to a lawyer about whether or not. How long have you been on the straight and narrow since your conviction?
Almost 2 years.
2 years. Okay. Well, I would suggest you go talk to a lawyer. This is the only way you're going to get it fixed, and see if you can get your record cleared. But the story about I was driving a car, I was thinking of buying it, there was 2 ounces of meth on board, you were found guilty. And continuing to relitigate that, when you were found guilty, you appealed it, the appeal was unsuccessful. At this point, you need to deal with the fact that you were convicted of a crime and you lost your Second Amendment rights, which is a great reason not to get involved in criminal activity if you care about your Second Amendment rights. It's the Radio Northwest Network. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. It's the Radio Northwest Network serving Oregon, Washington, and Idaho with honestly provocative talk radio. Now, when I was a kid, I'm sure that virtually every kid in America has heard the story about the king's new clothes, where a scam artist basically manages to convince the king, I'm going to make you the finest clothing in the world, and if you believe you can't see it, you're just mistaken. That we're going to make people believe that the king has new clothes. And anybody who says otherwise, well, you'll simply be shunned by everybody else in the community. And I think there are a number of good points that little story told to virtually every little kid in America. The story makes some very good, important points. Believe your eyes if everybody else is telling you something otherwise. Say, hold on a second, I can see this with my own eyes. And don't be fooled. And at the end, it was a little kid who managed to call it all out and called out the king's new clothes. In this case, you've got a phenomenon called critical race theory. And if you listen to the left, they'll say, no, nothing like that is being taught in our schools at all. And there are people who call this show and they say, Lars, none of this is in the public schools. That's all just a conservative fantasy. Well, the young lady who can put the lie to that is Lieve Finna, who's the director of the Center for Education of the Washington Policy Center, because she looks at what the schools are actually proposing to do, in this case in Washington State. Lieve, welcome back.
Well, thanks so much, Lars. This is a very important subject for everyone to get up to speed on, and your analogy is exactly right. What I have been doing is documenting evidence and showing what districts are doing, what the state is doing, and showing that they're actually pushing this false ideology, it's a political ideology. It's dangerous to the education of our children. The latest thing that I found out is that the state superintendent of public education, who has denied that there's critical race theory in the schools, just put out a new ethnic studies framework rules, okay? And that is the way that is critical race theory content masquerading as ethnic studies. So it's really an incredible situation where they're hiding, they're hiding harmful content by cloaking it with language of acceptance and diversity and tolerance and ethnic studies and culturally responsive teaching, social and emotional learning. All that language should raise alarm bells in the minds of parents and community members that are concerned about this, because this is going to reduce the quality of instruction. It's going to harm children. It's going to teach children racial hatred. It will resegregate children into groups based on their race. It's awful. It's illegal. It's unconstitutional. And our public schools are doing this to us now. And so my job, part of my job is to just show what the evidence is, and let everyone know what's actually happening, because What's actually happening is very scary, and you have evidence of it all around you if you start looking.
Well, because critical race theory is not that complicated. You know, Ibrahim Kendi, the guy who's the biggest pusher of this, when they were pushing it mostly at colleges, would say, here's what it is. America is an irredeemably racist country, that its history of racism based on slavery goes back 400 years, not back to 1776, but back to 1619. And that has somehow led to a country where you say there's white supremacy and white dominance of the country everywhere. And you say, well, where do you see this? And you say, no, you can't see it. It's the king's new clothes. And you say, well, I don't believe in something I can't see. If you can't give me an example of it, and they say, oh, if you don't believe it, that means you are a white supremacist. That means you are part of the problem, and we have to change your point of view. And this ethnic studies framework that you've written about for Washington Policy Center says they're going to put this into the classrooms. They're careful not to call it CRT, but they say, you quote the lessons as saying, we're going to dismantle white supremacy, both ideologically and in practice. Well, they're going to tell little kids, if you have white skin, you're part of the oppressor class. You're part of the problem. And if you are brown or black, then you are the oppressed. That these other people are oppressing you. And you say, this is going to make kids hate each other. If they take it seriously, it probably would. I mean, if you're a little kid, a person of color, and you say, you mean all these other white kids in here, they're part of the system that holds me down and keeps me from succeeding? It gives you an excuse not to succeed, first of all. And secondly, if somebody told me that's the person who's, you know, holding the whip over you, I wouldn't like them either.
Oh, it's a terrible thing. And then for white children, they're made to feel guilty if they're not guilty and if they don't disavow their whiteness. You know, they're talking about whiteness studies now and how to not be so white. And one of the characteristics of being white is being on time, being objective, using evidence and reason to make a decision in society, a merit-based system. Those are all characteristics of being white. Okay, so this ideology has a goal. They are trying to go the back door to force race-based quota hiring by the government, which has been declared illegal in our state and in many other states, and by the U.S. Constitution. Okay, they're going to be hiring based on race now in these districts. They're going to be eliminating grades and tests. They're working very hard to eliminate any kind of program for gifted children because the goal is equity. And in order to get equity, you reduce the achievement of those that are doing well in the system to bring up, supposedly that's going to bring up those that are not doing well in the system, which is an absurd approach and anti-human and anti-academic. I mean, what is going to happen if this isn't stopped? We're going to see test scores plummet because they're going to have to spend all this time teaching this. This is a complex idea, okay?
And so what happens when one of these kids hits the real world and gets the first job they have and the boss says, you keep counting change out wrong. So you've got a retail job. And you say, yeah, but getting the right answer isn't important. It's how I feel about it. And if I'm counting your money out wrong and I'm overcharging some customers and undercharging others, what's the big deal? Oh, and by the way, you expecting me to be on time for work or work hard while I'm here? That's not important either. What person in the private sector is going to tolerate that in an employee?
I know, and it's a teaching children to be aggrieved, you know, to be angry at their society because it's racist, supposedly, which is a falsehood. It's not true. Teaching children to be angry about their society, if you don't be proud of the legacy of freedom and independent thinking, you know, that came to this country through, you know, the Declaration of Independence. They're trying to. I just read an article saying they're trying to erase the Declaration of Independence, the foundation of this marvelous country that has brought so much prosperity and opportunity for all.
Absolutely right. That's Liev Fenna, who's director of the Center for Education at the Washington Policy Center. Liev, it's always a pleasure. Coming up in a moment, Facebook is now letting users give assistance to illegal aliens to get across our borders. We'll get to that in your phone calls and emails coming up next. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show, and welcome back to the Radio Northwest Network. If you want to vote in our Twitter poll today, that's easy enough to do. Do renters who have not been paying for a year or longer, not paying their rent, do they need even more protection? The House Speaker, in this case in the state of Oregon, is calling for a special session. This is Tina Kotek, who hopes someday to be the governor of the state. She's running for that job. She says that the pandemic and the coming winter demand action now. She says there are almost 12,000 renters statewide who've applied for pandemic assistance who are on the cusp of losing legal protection from eviction because it's taken too long for the state to get relief money to their landlords. I don't think that's the question. The question should be, if you were working before the pandemic arrived and that's how you paid the rent, and there are now literally hundreds of thousands of open jobs in the Pacific Northwest, 100,000 in the state of Oregon, more than that in the state of Washington, more still in the state of Idaho, 10.4 million open jobs in America today. Sorry, 11.4. It was 10.1. So 11.4 million available jobs. What is your excuse for not getting the same kind of job or better than the one that you got or had before the pandemic arrived? And if you're not going to do that, give us the sensible reason why you don't want to pay your rent on your own. Now, if you say, well, the landlord, I owe him a bunch of money. I'd love to talk to one of these people as a naysayer, one of these people not paying their rent, and say, how did you pay your rent before the pandemic? And during the pandemic, if you were paying your rent before with earnings that you got at your job, what did you do with all that unemployment money, including an extra $2,500 a month? That was for the first 6 months or so of the pandemic. And then after that, $300 extra. That's $1,200 or $1,300 every month. What'd you do with all that money? What about your stimulus check? What about your child care tax credit check? If you were paying the rent before by working a job, why are you not working a job today? I think you can imagine why an awful lot of people who are in that situation, they just don't want to pay the rent. And the Democrats have introduced them to the idea of just indefinitely not paying their rent. And now Tina Kotek says the Oregon legislature, which is flush with money because tax collections did not go down during the pandemic, they went up. She wants to have a special session to give away a bunch of money because she's running for governor. So do renters who have not been paying for as much as a year need even more protection? I would say no to that. Glad to get your calls on that, too, at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Our Twitter poll brought to you by Ultimate Truck Services. If you rely on trucks for business, Ultimate keeps your biggest assets on the road and running right. Find them at ultimatetruckservice.com. Let's go to Tim. Hey, Tim, thanks for listening on the Radio Northwest Network. What's on your mind today? Hey, Tim. All right, let's go to Carl. Carl, welcome to the program. What's on your mind?
Yeah, you were talking about the critical race theory that's being shoved down our kids' throats, and I know for a fact that there's a school in the Barlow School District. It's a Montessori school out of Damascus, and as we speak, the librarian there is taking books that were paid for by taxpayers, and according to her ideology, she's getting rid of anything that's offensive to her, including books by one book about Andrew Jackson, who was obviously a U.S. president and
a racist.
Father
of the Democrat Party, the party of slavery. Yep.
Yeah. Well, no, she says he offends her because he was mean to the Native Americans. And, you know, these kids are being... this stuff is being shoved down their throats at that school. It's a Montessori school, which is kind of shocking. I thought they were
you mentioned that, and it made me wonder. Montessori schools, for the most part, are private schools. They're not public schools. And yet you said is paid for by the taxpayers. How did this private school get the taxpayers to pay for their books?
I don't know how the Barlow School District is involved, but they are actually under the Barlow School District.
Could they be a charter school, perhaps? I guess
it's a Montessori school. It says so right on the sign.
There is a Montessori method for teaching.
This woman is single-handedly you know, getting rid of any book that has what she called old white people stories in it, you know. And it's sickening, you know, what
they're
doing.
Does that include George Washington and Abraham Lincoln and Thomas Jefferson and Samuel Adams?
That's coming up. You know, that's coming up. I mean, these people are out of their mind.
Well, let me ask you, Carl, if you have all this knowledge of it, what does the school board say, the one that represents that school?
The school board is very liberal, and they're going along with it just like they went along with other things. Like, for instance, that same school took down the American flag. They weren't raising the American flag, and but one of the teachers there was putting BLM flags and the rainbow flag in his classroom, and the school board supported him.
Well, you know, then you need you have two choices. You need to either get your kids out of that school and take them somewhere else, or you have to change the school board. I really think it comes down to those two choices. Get rid of the, the people on the school board.
Yeah, I just wanted parents to know that have kids in that school. Their kids are, I know for a fact, I'm not going to tell you how I know, but that's what they're doing to these kids.
Well, I believe it. I believe it. The problem is you've got to fix the problem. You've got to either change the school board, that'll change the people making the decision, or you have to take your kids out and send the message through the marketplace, we're simply not going to leave our kids to this kind of abuse. We will not do it that way. Now, I mentioned Facebook. Facebook is a private company, but they're a Section 230 company, so they get special protection from the government. Let me point out what they have now admitted they're doing. We have hundreds of thousands of people crossing America's southern border. And you say, okay, the coyotes are helping them do that. They're getting paid well for doing that. Some of the coyotes are even firing shots across our border at our people on the other side, at our border patrol agents. Well, Facebook has now admitted that it allows people to share information about how to come across the border illegally or be smuggled into the United States. They say it crafted the policy to give them a shot at asylum and prevent them from relying on human traffickers. So in other words, Facebook wants to do for free for the illegal aliens coming illegally across our border what the coyotes charge them for. I'm pretty sure the coyotes are not going to lose much business over it. The company made the admission. They wrote a letter to Arizona's Attorney General, Mark Brnovich. Brnovich was stunned by this. He wrote a letter late last week to the Justice Department. He asked the Attorney General, Merrick Garland, who is not exactly an honest guy, to open an investigation. He says Facebook's policy of allowing posts promoting human smuggling and illegal entry to the United States to regularly reach its billions of users seriously undermines the rule of law. The company is a direct facilitator and thus exacerbates the catastrophe occurring at our southern border. He sent the letter raising concerns about Facebook. The tech company said it does try to remove drug trafficking or post promoting human smuggling, but says people are free to post information about sneaking across the border illegally. They say, yeah, we want to help those people out. You're listening to the Lars Larson Show. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show. One of the most frequent questions I've been getting lately, and I don't know why people think I have a special insight. I've never been a member of the House or the Senate on Capitol Hill, nor the House and Senate in a state legislature, but I begin to get this sense that the so-called infrastructure bill, that's the $1.2 trillion or so, then the $3.5 trillion, I call it the welfare bill, and then you've got the $1.9 that passed earlier this year, and you got another $2.5 trillion or so that's going to actually fund the government. You know, by the time you total it all up, it's $8 or $9 trillion, an amount of money so big nobody can imagine it. I keep hoping that the longer this stretches out, the less likely it is that the $3.5 trillion bill or the so-called infrastructure bill, that's not really about roads and highways and bridges, but is more about electric car chargers and subsidies for cars for rich people and things like that, that maybe they just won't pass at all, especially as we get closer to an election year. A guy who has an insight on that is Senator Jim DeMint, former U.S. Senator from South Carolina, but he gets the title. He's the current chair of the Conservative Partnership Institute, and he's actually tried his hand at fiction as well. We'll talk about that, too. Senator, welcome back to the program.
Lars, thanks for having me, and I hope you're right. I hope these bills don't pass because the amount of money is horrible, but the policies in it are even worse.
Describe that for my audience. Why? And because I agree with you, but I want you to tell my audience why the policies that are built in, baked into these cakes are so bad, but, so much worse perhaps than the dollar figure.
Well, what they call the reconciliation bill, which they say is $3.5 trillion, but it's actually over $5 trillion if you actually count the spending. But it's got everything from federalizing elections in there. Like you said, it's got a lot of the Green New Deal in there that essentially cuts off a lot of America's energy for energy that we don't have yet, and a lot of social programming that's going to be paying people not to work like we've seen. And we really don't know. They normally stick a lot of the worst stuff in it in the last minute in what they call a manager's amendment that nobody has time to read. But they're trying to jam through something that'll fundamentally change the country. That's what they've said it will do. And if they're able to pass this $3.5 trillion, then it'll pull along the infrastructure bill, as you've pointed out, has very little real infrastructure in it, but it's more of social giveaways. But they're trying to make more people dependent on the government and discourage work. And I think the bigger crisis they can create, the more excuses they'll have for the government to take more control of our economy.
Well, and Senator DeMint, I guess I'm just wondering why there isn't a louder hue and cry that in a country where we've got a supply chain crisis, we don't have every employer I talk to says, I can't hire people, and I'm offering more money and better benefits than I ever have before, and I can't find people who want to work, that in a country like that, why there isn't more questioning of a president who, you're right, as Jen Psaki and Joe Biden have both said, they want to fundamentally change the economy. And if somebody says they want to change something, my usual first question is, to what and why? And they don't say that, or at least I don't think they give us an honest answer. What do you think the honest answer is to what they want to change is?
Well, it's a socialist utopia, even though history shows socialism never worked, and it's resulted in millions of people being killed. They just think they has never been done right before, and they can do it right now, particularly if it's more global in nature. And so there are a lot of people who just really believe America should be diminished and be part of a global humanity, in a sense. And they're doing things to hurt the country intentionally. It's not incompetence. I know the left too well. They're a lot smarter than the Republicans are. The border crisis is not an accident, because illegals dilute the vote in America. They're being brought in. They're being sent all over the country. They're being signed up to benefits. The Afghanistan debacle was not an accident. I'm convinced that there's some people pulling the strings in the Biden administration who want to humiliate America and bring us to our knees, in a sense. And the supply chain with the dozens and dozens of ships full of cargo just sitting off the shore because we can't get these government union workers who work at the port authorities to unload them. There's a lot going on here. And you ask a great question. Why isn't there more of an outcry?
Yeah.
Because so many people watching the mainstream media and don't know what's going on. And they won't know until things come crashing down. I'm grateful for Americans like those who are going to school board meetings and challenging the school board, because it's their children involved, and they've seen during this COVID crisis what their children are being taught. And I just hope we can wake the rest of Americans up. But more and more Americans are tired of being lied to, and there actually is a relationship to this novel that I like to talk about, Satan's Dare, because it gets at where truth really comes from. And that's what's happening in America, the death of truth. We can't find out the truth about hardly anything.
No, and in fact, you based it on solid Christian beliefs and Christian principles that's where you're going to find truth. So what is Satan's Dare?
I missed the last part of that.
Sorry, Lawrence. About that. I'm asking what's the premise of the book, since you've chosen to take a novel as your way of communicating? What is the premise of Satan's Dare?
Yeah. The novel is it's actually a love story of couples dealing with tragedy, and the title comes from when Satan dares God in the first chapter of Job to remove Job's blessing. Yep. And the book makes the point that this is really an allegory about all human beings, the things that we go through. And so there's a big part of this of just asking questions. Is the Bible true? Did God really create the earth? But the underlying meaning for me as someone who's been in politics is defending the truth of the Bible and basic Judeo-Christian ideas that this country was founded on. And I think a lot of our problems today are the result of a decline in the church and a decline in the confidence in that the Bible is true and that God is really sovereign in this world.
What made you choose a novel rather than a nonfiction book?
Well, Lars, it's a great question because I actually started this out as kind of just a documentary, so to speak. I've been working on this for 10 or 15 years off and on, doing the research, comparing what science says to what the Bible says and looking for alignment. But, after a few years of doing that, the publisher said that this is just way too deep and in the weeds. You need to put it in a form of a story where people can find themselves in the characters and the situations. And so it was actually a lot of fun bringing these people to life and using just real-life situations that I've been aware of. They may be fictional characters, but what they're talking about are real situations, real truth, real science. They're very real debates in this between science and the Bible. And what we conclude is that science actually proves the Bible is true. And the Bible tells us if you want truth, if you want freedom, that begins with a knowledge of God. My concern today is that we think, well, religion doesn't mix with politics, so we're going to throw it out of the public discourse. But that's why we see a lot of this, what I would call evil, but it's certainly a different kind of behavior than I would have ever expected before. And it's certainly changed in the 20 years I've been in the House and the Senate and in Washington. The civility is gone.
I think you're absolutely right. That's Senator Jim DeMint, the former U.S. Senator from the great state of South Carolina, the current chair of the Conservative Partnership Institute, and the author of a brand new book called Satan's Dare. Senator, it's always a pleasure to have you on the show. Glad to be with you as well. If you want to jump into the best conversation in talk journalism, it's right here every day at 866-HEY-LARS. That's 866-439-5277. Emails go to talk@LarsLarson.com. Welcome back to the Lars Larson Show and the Radio Northwest Network. Glad to be with you on a Monday and always glad to take your calls from across our three-state region. That's Oregon, Washington, and Idaho. We've been serving that region for more than 21 years, and we're glad to do it. I started off today talking about all the essential people that we're going to be losing on Massacre Monday today, because state governments and a lot of private institutions have decided to simply clear the decks and fire people who are not willing to take the jab. And I got a few emails from some of the PR folks out there who work for some of these government agencies, including schools. One of them wrote and said, Lars, they're not being fired. And I wrote back and I said, yeah, you're not firing the teachers. You're just telling them, number one, you won't be getting a paycheck. And number two, you won't be scheduled for any work. But officially, they're just going to stick you in limbo. And some of the districts are literally saying, you're going to sit in that limbo until maybe February of next year, when they think a lot of people won't be paying attention. And at that point, we will actually fire you. But I would ask you, do you think it's honest if a government agency says, we're not firing, or a private institution like a hospital says, we're not firing these workers. They're simply being told that they're not going to be scheduled to do any work, and they're not going to be getting a paycheck. If your boss came to you and said, by the way, go home, you're not going to be working, you're not going to be getting a paycheck, but you're not fired. Most people in the private sector are not that dishonest. And Guideman writes in on Twitter, Lars, don't forget about the teachers as well. They're now allowing anybody over the age of 18 to come in and teach these students who've had basically no teaching for the last year and a half due to the pandemic. This is a disaster for the kids. And he's right about that. Oregon is now saying substitute teachers may teach with no bachelor's degree whatsoever, which falls right in line with what the legislature of Oregon did last year. They passed a law and said you can still graduate from high school. You're going to get a shiny little diploma, and you don't have to be able to read. You don't have to be able to write. You don't have to be able to do math, because math, as we know, is evil and racist. So therefore, you get a diploma. It's like having a participation trophy that they hand out when your little kid is on a T-ball team. But it doesn't make any sense that you would say, we're going to pay billions of dollars in Oregon, billions of dollars in Washington, billions in Idaho for K through 12 public education that's running on average in Washington State $17,000 or $18,000 per student per year, Oregon in about the same lane, and Idaho the same. We're going to be paying all this money. And there's no guarantee that when your kid finishes after 12 years of that education, that the child will be able to read, write, or count. Now, and by the way, we're paying all this money to teachers, but we're willing to take teachers now who don't even have the minimum qualifications that teachers have always had to have, or at least in the modern era. Let's go to Frank. Hey, Frank, welcome to the Lars Larson Show. What's on your mind today?
Hi, Lars. First of all, Colin Powell's family, prayers to you.
Rest in peace. What's that?
How do you get COVID if you're as sick as he was? I mean, he should have been pretty well protected, don't you think?
Well, you need to know that Colin Powell, and in fact, I got emails today from, and I would say rest in peace to Colin Powell. I interviewed him on the show quite some time ago. He's an interesting guy. He was always a bit liberal for me. He was more of a rhino, a Republican in name only. But, you know, having said that, to answer your question, he had myeloma, which is a kind of cancer, and he was under treatment for myeloma. But one of the things that both the disease and the treatment do to you is it lowers your immune system. It makes you particularly susceptible to infection. And even though he'd been vaccinated twice, if you've got other things that are going on in your body that make you more susceptible to infection, that can happen. That makes sense?
Yeah, but how do they let him be around somebody that's got COVID?
Well, he's still a human being. I mean, the government doesn't yet control every moment of every one of our days, you know, to say you're not allowed. Now, at age 84, with a compromised immune system, I would imagine that Secretary Powell probably was pretty careful about who he was around. But the big mystery of this, Frank, is that when you say somebody who has COVID, you say, why would they let him be around that person? You do understand, Frank, that with both the Alpha and the Delta variants of COVID, most of the people who get it are not symptomatic at all. They either are asymptomatic altogether. They don't even know that they've got the illness in them because they're not ill. Or they have such mild symptoms that it seems like a little cold, a little runny nose, a little cough. It doesn't seem like you're sick. And that's the majority of COVID cases. In the case of Alpha, the first COVID that arrived, COVID-2, they said about 80% of the cases were either asymptomatic or very, very mild symptoms that you might not even notice. So how would you decide who you're going to be around based on their health when their health, their at least the visible health, the health they're experiencing, doesn't even tell them that they're sick?
Okay, I'm just curious. I didn't think he would be around that many people, and then he ends up with COVID.
Yeah, on the other hand, if you think about it, Frank, this is a man who rose to the heights in the U.S. military. He was also Secretary of State. He was very involved as a member of Congress. I would imagine he knows a lot of people. And I would imagine that even if he limited the people he saw, there's no way for you to say, I'm not going to be around the people who look sick, because most of the people with COVID do not look sick, do not get sick. It's the Radio Northwest Network and the Lars Larson Show.